waiting for a few minutes because the advisory council of the college was meeting, as some of you may know, and we wanted to give an opportunity for people from the advisory council to join us if they wish. And I can see by the latest flow of people coming in that that meeting must be over. I recognize some faces. Welcome to everybody. I'm Stuart Stein, Associate Dean of the college. It's my honor and privilege to make the introductions today. The introductions, I hope, will be brief, but they are a bit complicated. We have a show in the Hartell Gallery, which is in two parts. One part, if you've been able to see the show, you know this, and one part is entitled The Capitol in Albany, which has four photographers photographing this wonderful building. And we also have the works of Judith Turner, who is with us today and will be speaking to you shortly. Judith is one of the four photographers, so she you can see her photographs in both parts. I want to make a few comments about the Capitol in Albany. It's appropriate, in a sense, for me to do that because one of the other things that I do outside of my Cornell life is to be on several commissions and advisory boards, and one of them is the Commission to Restore the State Capitol. I'm a commissioner on that august body, of which there were four or five in the history of that building, maybe six or seven. History will tell us that. And all of those groups had the same goal, and that is to take this wonderful building and look at it, do a master plan, and fix it up, restore it. The latest effort started in 1980, and has had a substantial amount of work done on researching the building, preparing a master plan, and as part of that effort try to focus attention on the part of the people of New York State and in the country on this wonderful building. That effort includes this exhibit. This exhibit was sponsored by a foundation retained the services of these well-known, world-renowned photographers to focus on this one building, a rather unique experience in photography, and to have put together an exhibit as well as a brochure about the building, and that exhibit is now touring, and we are very pleased and honored to have it here at Cornell this week. The State Capitol is a building of great architectural and historical significance. It was started, ground was broken in 1879, and in 1979 it was proclaimed a national historic landmark 100 years later. Some of the architects who worked on it are names that are familiar to many of us. The first architect was Thomas Fuller, although his designs do not show up. But Leopold Eidlitz and Henry Hobson Richardson are the architects, original architects of the State Capitol. Frederick Law Olmsted participated in design and landscape planning, and finally Isaac Perry, all well-known architects in the profession. The Eidlitz Fellowship is known to Cornell students, many of whom have benefited by the award of such a fellowship to take them to other parts of the country and the world to study architecture. The building has inspired many people over the years, and the purpose of this exhibit not only is to bring this building, this special building, to the attention of the citizens of this state and country, but it is also intended through the eyes of the artists, the photographers, to do what all of the occupants and the others who've seen it have done before, is to inspire and educate and to raise the consciousness of those who come in contact with that building to higher levels, a goal which is one of the major goals of the artist. And that brings us to Judith Turner, one of the people who is exhibiting here and who is with us and will be with us in a few moments. I just want to say a few words about her. She'll tell you herself in her own words and with her own images the type of work she's been doing and what her ideas are. She is basically a truly talented person among architectural photographers who has an ability to grasp the architect's intentions of the moment that they set eyes on a building. Judith Turner, however, does not make it her purpose to simply convey these intentions, nor does she treat her subject in an analytical manner. It is rather as if her sensibilities are enhanced by the objects, which happen to be called architecture, that she photographs. She uses her camera to record elemental aspects of the buildings that we take for granted in our daily lives. Her photographs are infused with a feminine sensitivity that gives them a unique freshness of space and form. I could say much more. Those are not my words. Those are words, description from her latest book called Annotations on Ambiguity, which is the title of her lecture. Just a few more words so you understand the experience and background that Judith has. Judith is from New Jersey, Atlantic City, works and lives in New York City, has had exhibitions all over the world, most recently in Tokyo, where she's just returned a few days ago, has exhibited in Tel Aviv, in Antwerp, in Paris, in Holland, in London, and has had an exhibit at the International Center of Photography in New York City, the Rizzoli Gallery, has published or has been published in at least five books. The most significant and probably the one that many of us know her for is her 1980 book on Judith Turner Photographs Five Architects. She is in a number of institutional collections around the country and has received reviews in various newspapers and magazines. I think that probably with that introduction, there's not much more I need to say, and I'll let Judith take over and say the rest. Judith Turner.
Well, thank you very much for the introduction. I would like to start this afternoon by discussing some of the technical aspects of my work first. Though I think print should be very beautiful, it's the technical aspect of photography that interests me the least. So that's why I do it first, so I can more or less get it out of the way. Anyway, I've been photographing with a Nikon camera using a normal lens and a small telephoto lens. For the last few years, however, though, I've switched to a larger format camera. I wanted a bigger negative to work with. But with that camera, again, I only use a standard normal lens and a small telephoto lens. I crop in the camera when the photos are taken and the full negatives are printed. I don't do my own printing. Since the beginning of my career, I've been working with a small lab in New York City, and in 15 years of work, I've only had three printers, and one has trained the next. So there's been a consistency in the quality of the printing. In the beginning, we did a lot of experimenting with different kinds of paper and with different ways of printing, and we decided that the work needed to be printed in a certain way, in a very particular way, and that's how we've been printing. And we print for a kind of richness of values, kind of drama. I would not mind if a few details are lost in order to get a rather dramatic, bold effect in many of the prints. I don't like any manipulation in the dark room, so the printing process is rather straightforward. There's a little dodging and some burning in done, but not very much. And the photographs are spotted for dust marks, but they're never retouched. The reason I think my prints are so successful is that my printers really love my work and they care about me very much, and we've always worked very closely together. So I think even though to some people it seems very orthodox not to do one's own printing, in my particular case, it's worked out just fine. Anyway, I began photographing in 1972. when I was drawn to construction sites where I found industrial materials intriguing in and of themselves in terms of pure form and structure. Shortly after that, I began doing studies of architecture, capturing the mood, the essence, and the poetry of a building has always been my aim. I'm not at all interested in recording overall interior or exterior views of buildings. Therefore, there's a strong emphasis on fragments and parts in my work. John Haydock, who's the dean of the architecture school at Cooper Union, said that when an architect designs a building, he doesn't have a total image in mind, but rather a series of images, a series of parts, fragments, and details that come together to form a total. Therefore, in one photograph of one fragment, you can capture the idea of an architecture. I use architecture as a point of departure to talk about things that interest me and to explore things that interest me. I'm very intrigued by ambiguity, specifically the ambiguity in our perceptions of things. When you photograph a fragment of a building, you take it out of context. It loses its relationship to what it was. It becomes something else and takes on a new meaning. In my photos, often positive becomes negative, negative becomes positive, foreground, background, and vice versa. Often curved forms seem to flatten out. Scale is very distorted sometimes, and perspective also seems quite exaggerated. I'm interested in light, specifically what light does to architecture. It transforms architecture and causes artistic effects. I'm interested in transparent light, translucent light, opaque light, all the values from very pale to very dark. I examine and explore form, the rhythm and the repetition of form, the juxtaposition, the progression of form, how one form penetrates another, how one form intersects and bisects another. My interest in geometry, I think, is very clear when you see my photos. And I once read a wonderful statement by Chagall that relates to geometry, which I would like to read. This is a direct quote. "Lines, angles, triangles, and squares swept me away to fascinating horizons." That might sound a little bit silly, but actually it's very much the way I feel about all of those things that relate to geometry also. In terms of my influences, I've been very directly influenced by Cubism, by Bauhaus art and architecture, by Mondrian and the Dutch De Stijl group, and by the Russian constructivists. Sergei Eisenstein, the Russian filmmaker, has been very influential on me in terms of composition. But the person who I've had the most affinity with has been Rodchenko. When I started photographing, there were no books of Rodchenko's photographs. You could just see one or two photographs reproduced on books of his total work. But then a few years ago, books did come out on his photographs, and it was then that I learned this special affinity that I had with him, mainly in use of the diagonal, but especially in photographing in series. I'll talk about photographing in series a little later on when I get to my most recent work. I've been asked to say a few words about the Capitol building. Now, when I was asked to photograph the Capitol building, I thought, well, this is a very nice challenge, because up until that time, I had only photographed modern architecture. But my intention was basically the same in approaching an older building, and that is trying to capture some of the mood and the poetry of the building. The Capitol building is a very monumental building. It's massive in scale. It's very elegant and a very refined building. It was a building that was built to last forever, and it's some of these qualities that I tried to capture in my photographs of the building. So now I've brought some slides to show. The slides are more or less a small retrospective of the work. and they're arranged in a chronological order, and I've divided my work into different categories. So we can show slides now, and I'll talk a little bit about the slides as we're going through them. And then when I'm finished, if there are any questions or any discussions, that would be very nice. And if anyone really feels compelled to say anything during the showing of the slides, that's fine with me as well. So we can begin now. And I'll get the points. So this group of slides is called the early work. And it doesn't matter what they are, but I know that people are often quite curious, so I will tell you what these things are. I'll wait a minute or so that you can try to guess if you'd like. This is simply something lying around in the construction site. It's like a sheet of metal with a circle cut out of it. And this is just the shadow, the moon shape. So we can go to the next. That happens to be a door of a truck, the outside door of a truck. This is part of an ornate banister on an outside monument. This is just a little edge on a building. Another edge. These are sheets of metal also at a construction site. That's from that same ornate banister, another view. This is a tire, a truck tire. It's a bench in the park looking down on it. This is another bench, happens to be at Cooper Hewitt Museum. I like the way this started to float in space. Here, I like what started to happen with positive and negative here, kind of reading, and these kind of vibrates. Most of these are 1972 to 74, 75. The World Trade Center. In most of my photos, I like the skies to read as flat plains. I never like to photograph when there are clouds in the skies because I always want them to be these flat plains of. They can be different values of gray. It doesn't bother me. They can be white or different values of gray. But they should always read as flat planes for me. Now, this is a new group. Next group relates to the photos in my book, The Five Architects. So the first one was John Haydock, who did the renovation of Cooper Union. This is on the roof of Cooper Union. I liked it because it starts to look like a little city on the roof. So he actually, photographing the renovation of Cooper Union was the first job that I ever had. He asked me to photograph the renovation, and I did it for many months, and I just wandered through the building and photographed. I was left very free. And we did hundreds of photos of the building, which John Haydock keeps in a box in a very precious way. It's very nice. Go ahead. That's the famous clock and the clock tower at Cooper Union. This is part of the round elevator. Peter Cooper thought elevators should be round. I think it was one of the first elevators ever designed. That's simply a reflection. One of the painting studios. Now we start with a small group from Charles Guathme. It's a house that he did in West Hampton Beach, Long Island. It's called the Kislevitz Residence. This is a balcony. And I think that's a staircase that overhangs this balcony and a skylight on top. Yeah, this is another floor. This is the ground floor and then the floor above. That's a fireplace. That's that balcony that juts out. This is Peter Eisenman. It's his house 6 in Connecticut. I like this because it really is translucent and it has a very oriental feeling. These are forms intersecting. This is a fake staircase that hangs from the ceiling. What it does is actually reflect another real staircase. That's inside looking out. And there's that staircase that's hanging from the ceiling. I like it. Actually, when you go in the house, you go up a green staircase, and then you see this other red staircase, and you say, oh, I can't wait to go up that red staircase, and you look for it, and can't find it. And then suddenly you realize it doesn't exist. And even once you know that, it's still interesting, I think. This is a slit in the second floor, comes down to the first. That same slit from another view, looking frontally at it. This is Michael Graves' very early work, the Benacerraf House edition in Princeton. This is when he still, of course, was in his Corbusier influence. I like this addition very much. As modern as it was next to this old house, the flow from the old to the new was very lovely. The transition was wonderful. I don't show the old house, I just show the new part, but it was very nice to be there. I think this picture very much makes it look like a stage set, which of course is what his work really does look like. This is Richard Meyer. It was the Bronx Developmental Center in the Bronx, New York. It was glossy, it was aluminum with all this material. Now I have a series on my columns. I like columns very much. I received a grant from the Graham Foundation to photograph columns. So I've done a lot of columns here, and I was in Greece and did columns, but I think I should do quite a bit of traveling in order to do columns. I was originally drawn to this because it truly was a white column next to a black wall. But in a way, I think the real special value of this photo for me is that the Greeks wanted to show the columnness of a column. And if any of my photos does that, I think somehow this one manages to do that in a way. I think it really says column in a rather straightforward but special way. Now this one, many people think is collage, but actually it's 1, 2, 3 columns, and the light is coming from here and just hitting the edge of this column, so this is a beam of light, that little white thin line. You can see the light coming in there. It's that. One of the reasons I liked my little Nikon camera was that, go back to the other one for a minute. In order to get a photo like this, to get these verticals standing up straight, you really have to sit on the ground in a way to get the base of the column. So with the very small camera, you have the flexibility to do that, which is why I love small cameras. Okay. Kind of shows the monumentality of columns. And it's what happens when other objects are near columns and what happens with different shadows falling on them. So I did columns themselves, and also I did columns and things that are very close to them, columns and steps sometimes. Or in this case, this is real. That's the edge of a building. This is at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. As you come up the front steps, you just turn to the right or the left, and it's looking through. It's very easy to get that positive shape through columns. I mean, the Greeks knew that very well. They, in fact, when they designed columns, they designed them with that in mind. That they designed with what that negative shape would be, so that that negative shape can become a positive. So people think this is a very complex shot. I don't. I find it rather simple, because that'll happen no matter what you do. But I like the round column against the angular one. And I do like negative becoming positive as well. This is three different columns, and I see this one as columns as line. Different weights of line, columns can read as line. And these are three bases nestling together, which I like very much. A more modern column. I think it's stainless steel. That's actually by Hans Holein. It's in New York. Well, I like this obviously for the complex reading of it. It's hard to see which is positive and which is, or which is real and which isn't real. Now this starts another series, which I call my PALE series. PALE in terms of value. This one happens to be an elevator shaft connection at Cooper Union, so it was part of that original series. That's also a column at Cooper Union. That's at Cooper Union as well. That's also Cooper Union. And these are windows. Taken on an angle. And this is just light coming in. This is from that house by Guathme. This was a little Byzantine church at the foot of the Acropolis in Athens. This was in a house in Paris by Malet Stevens, private house. From that same house in Paris. Now we started a series called the Dark Series, Dark and Value. This is Cooper Union, that's that clock again. This is in the Guathme house in Long Island. This is a window, and there are just trees outside the window. This is a balcony, and that's just shadows on the wall. That same house by Guathme? This is at the World Trade Center. It's looking up a staircase, I think. This was from a building by Lou Davis. I photographed the Philip Morris building in Richmond, Virginia for him. I did a whole series of photographs, and the photographs were used as artwork in the building. Whenever I work for architects, it's always because they're interested in my vision. They never tell me what to photograph. They tell me to just go through the building and photograph. And usually I do capture some of their intentions. Often I capture things that they didn't even see, so I'm told. Anyway, I like this dynamic sweep of this staircase. That's the same building of Lou Davis's. It's Davis and Brody. That's also the Philip Morris building with the most obvious geometry. This was a skylight in a fire staircase. It was a beautiful little fire staircase. That's a different staircase in the building. And the circle again is a skylight. And that was the first little fire staircase. This is other photos done at the Philip Morris building. Also Philip Morris. Now, these are a few things that I did for Harry Cobb, who's a partner in I.M. Pei's office. And this was an addition to a building in Maine that he did. The light came in from these skylights, and that's how the paintings were lit. It actually worked quite well in this building. Then they also, I think, had artificial light around here. That's just in close in one of those skylights. Now I had a wonderful project. Jim Fried, who's another partner in I.M. Pei's office, asked me to photograph the convention center throughout its construction. So I photographed for 5 years, and it was a project that I especially loved doing. And I show this slide to show the point at which I began the project. He asked me a little late. I would have preferred to start a few months earlier. Anyway, I started at this point. And I like this slide very much because in a certain way, it looks like a ruin. It almost looks like a Greek or a Roman ruin as opposed to something that's being built. Okay. And actually, the first time I went there, it was like being at an excavation because when they would dig down to build things, they found things. They found old bottles and shells and pieces of leather and pieces of glass and pottery. I actually found a beautiful little inkwell. The things were about 150 years old, but it was very lovely. So it was exciting in the beginning to be there. Now, the point of my point of doing this project, it wasn't to show that it was just a building going up. I wanted to show that it was a very specific building going up, a very special building. I wanted to show what was unique about the architecture of this building during its construction. And that wasn't it wasn't that difficult to do in this particular case because it was an innovative construction. For example, all these columns were specially designed for this building. Like, they really had these slits in them, and they really remained that way. So that's very unique. So right away, it's something easy to pick up on to show the uniqueness of this building. That's the Empire State Building in the back. So it's a very surrealistic kind of setting at the beginning when you're photographing this. It was on the near the Hudson River, so you looked east at Manhattan in the beginning. It was terrific. Again, you see no clouds in the sky, reading its flat plain. And again, there were a lot of columns, which I, of course, adore, so it was perfect for me. I could have more columns to photograph. Now we're starting to get some of the structure. Now, they had these columns sitting on other columns. It was terrific. And then you're starting to get some of the structure fitting in with those columns. This was, it's going to be a ramp. I showed these things to Massimo Vignelli, the designer. And he said to me, "My goodness, Judith, you didn't let one of these go outside into the white." I said, "Of course, Massimo, I would never do that." Anyway, this is one of my favorites from the convention center. For me, a lot of these convention center photos are my most surreal photos. I don't think about surrealism when I photograph, but somehow, during these times, I think because of the nature of what was happening, some of them look rather surreal. And you notice, of course, I never have people in my photos. Well, at the convention center, it wasn't that difficult to get away from the workers because it was a huge site. They never let me go around by myself. I always had someone who went with me. And I could just easily go to some area where there were no workers and photograph, and it was fine. These were monstrous columns that you can still see. They're at the convention center now because it's just enclosed in a glass, glass box. It's like a crystal palace for those of you who don't know it. And this sits on these nodules at the end here. Keeps going up. This is where they had all the problems when a lot of things had to be redone. It was with those. Evidently, they didn't fit properly. It was a big headache for them, to say the least. When I was at the site, I got intrigued by all the trucks. There's so many different kinds of trucks at building sites. So I did two mini-series within this major series. One was trucks at a construction site, and the others was just building materials at a construction site. So this is one of the trucks at a construction site. Now the building's moving much further on. It's like kind of like a stage set. Now the building's finished, and in this particular case, I did purposely photograph on this cloudy day, but here, for me, these, they're